I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have a lot to talk about today. You know, it's near and dear to me to protect people from violence. I do workplace violence. I teach in the schools. We've gone over this how many times? Well, recently there's been another active shooter incident out there in the world at the, of all places, the Garlic Festival in California. So when you first hear that, you say, you know, who would attack somebody at the Garlic Festival? Well, it's a highly popular family event in this part of California. It's just south of San Francisco. And families go there. They try different food. There's games for the kids. There's fun things for people to do. And out of nowhere comes a gunman who shoots and kills three people and injures 15 others. Two of his victims, one was a 13-year-old girl, and the other was a 6-year-old little boy who happened to die in the line of fire of this, I don't even want to talk about what kind of person he is, but this individual who shows up and does this. So what is the reality of these active shooter incidents? You know, we all worry about the schools. We talk so much about school shootings, and that's high on our list of concerns because it's really all about children. The most vulnerable among us are our kids, and when someone attacks a school, there is really nothing worse than that. But the statistics, if you look at the statistics for active shooters, and these events are not slowing down, they are speeding up. There's more of them every year. The reality is that most active shooter events, about 60% of them, take place in places other than schools. So that means movie theaters, concerts, garlic festivals, places where people gather are just as vulnerable. Our workplaces, the number two line of death report is workplace violence for all jobs across the country. So this is an important thing for us to understand. Where does the threat come from and how do we deal with it? Well, the shooter at the Garlic Festival put a little bit of planning into his activity. He cut a hole in a fence, a chain link fence, because they had security watching the entrances. They had a perimeter fence to keep people out. But like we learn at every one of these incidents, every one is a learning opportunity. Here's a guy that now brings bolt cutters with him, because he must have known that there was security and he couldn't just walk in the front door with his rifle. So he went to a secluded area and he used this bolt cutter to apparently cut open the fence to gain entry to the festival. He walked into the main area. People saw him. He was dressed in, they're describing it as military garb or some kind of police raid gear type of thing. This is very, very common. I'll get to that in a minute. But he shows up there. He starts shooting randomly into the crowd, firing rounds in multiple different directions, and people are running and scurrying. Now, if you listen, there's lots of video out there that you can listen to of the actual events as they unfolded. There was a band playing. They were doing their final song of the day, and all of a sudden you hear gunshots, and the crowd, you can see they react to it as though it's fireworks. Until they realize it's not fireworks, people start dropping that there's gunfire going on. The band ducks down, you know, underneath the stage as best they can, and people start running in every direction. It's frightening and terrifying. Imagine being there with your kids, being there with your spouse, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whatever, and gunfire erupts. You know, where do you go? Where do you run to? Well, this is an important thing for us to consider. You know, as we move closer and closer to the start of the football season, kids going back to school very, very soon, there's one area that we haven't looked at, and these outdoor festivals. You know, the Las Vegas shooting, now this festival in California. We need to pay a little more attention to the outside arenas. You know, sports games, graduations, concerts, anything where people are going to gather. You know, what is it you can actually do? So we can actually talk about that a little bit. Because I do have programs to try and help people figure out how to secure these events. What should you be looking at? You know, how many perimeter rings of security should you have at an event, and how do you go about doing that, and manpower. But I just wanted to talk about that particular incident right now as just the latest in a long line of these attacks. that just do not seem to be stopping. And as a society, we have got to take more proactive action. You know, a friend of mine has a company that makes a portable device for your phone that you can send out emergency messages. And he was on one of the social media posts, and he said, he made a list of all these places. He goes, so it'll never happen here. And then he lists movie theater, concert, school, workplace. He just goes on and on until you realize our religious facilities are not safe havens from this. Did you see that video not too long ago? There was a Catholic priest, and he was doing his sermon, and some woman came running out of nowhere and pushed him off a stage. And he wasn't a young man. He appeared to be in his mid to late 60s. And this woman was unhappy with him because he was giving a sermon, and she didn't like the topic of the sermon, so she targeted him and shoved him right off the stage. So these places that we always considered safe, we can't be paranoid. You know, we can't live paranoid, but we had better be aware and prepare and think about what could possibly happen. And then we have to take action for it. So houses of worship, religious facilities, schools, graduations, business, everywhere needs our attention. And this Garlic Festival shooting is just the latest example that when you get people gathered together, you have to be careful. Now, we don't know what his motive is right now. They released his name, which I'm not going to use right now, but the investigation is continuing. I've seen a lot of posts on social media, different news organizations, gave his name out. But, police are searching for his motive. Well, eventually they'll find his motive. But it turned, three people are dead, including some children. And once again, we had better do the right thing. Now, that leads me to the next thing I want to talk about. Because violence seems to be, prevalent in different parts of our society. We look at these Antifa people. They were huge in the news a couple of months back because they had some very, very big rallies out in Washington where we saw lots and lots of people who were attacked and the police did nothing to protect them. Now, I'm not faulting the police here. We know what happened. The political entities, the mayor and his office, pulled the police back because they didn't want confrontation. And I think in most cases, we would have to think that some of these far left leaning individual politicians agree with some of the things that Antifa talks about, because they are basically a communist organization. They say they're anti-fascist, but they're actually a communist organization. And they come out and pontificate these things. And I think a lot of these left wing politicians agree with them. I don't say they agree with the violence, but as we know how the left operates historically, violence is an important motive, an important tool for them to use to obtain their goals. We can look at it over and over and over again. Every left-wing movement, you will find that there's violence involved to make their point, to cow people, to intimidate people into doing what they want. That's exactly what happened in Washington. You see, people are scared to death to do anything about them because, what are they going to do? They come out with bats with their face covered. They're throwing, they call a milkshake. It's actually like a milkshake with some fast hardening cement, and they throw that in people's faces. They hit you in the head with it. There was an elderly man, he was in his 70s. His head was split open by a bat. Where were the cops? Where's this mayor to send the police in? How do you respond to this? I can only imagine how two people would respond to that should they be in charge. One of them would be Rudy Giuliani. I have seen Rudy Giuliani handle riots and handle other uprisings, and he's very, very forceful, and he understands that peace and order is the key to a governmental job. And when you're the mayor, you're in charge of everyone's safety, so you do what you got to do. The other person would be your very own Lieutenant Joe. This political correctness which allows these people to operate because we're afraid there's going to be a confrontation. What the political powers that need to be, and this would be in my advice to everyone out there, whether you're a mayor of a city or a councilman, and where these people may come around to your community, I would let it be known right from the beginning that you are there to protect the citizens of your community. Protest is time-honored tradition for us Americans, and we allow protest. You don't have to agree with me. You don't have to agree with the government. Matter of fact, you are encouraged to voice your opposition to governmental parties, to governmental policies. That's what our Constitution allows us to do. What you're not allowed to do is engage in violence, demand that other people listen to you, and attack them if they hold views that are different than yours. So I would make it very clear that our community here in Chasing Justice Land, we are fully fully backing of the Constitution, where if you have a right to redress your government and you want to come and you have something to say, you want to protest, you follow the rules to protest, you go right ahead and do it. Anybody shows up with a mask on, anybody shows up with a weapon of any kind, they will be arrested. And I would not be concerned about them resisting, because I would instruct my law enforcement officers to turn their cameras on and then disarm these people however they could. So if you wade into the crowd and people are lifting a bat, I'm not saying shoot them. I'm saying you go remove that bat and you take that person into custody. If they fight, you fight back. You know, as a police trainer, I teach law enforcement officers all the time, we are not out there to get hurt. You have to use the utmost restraint in every opportunity, but you are allowed to win the confrontation. There is nothing that says that our police officers have to be injured, hurt, or killed in order for them to do their jobs and respond. It's one of the things that you have to understand about the use of force, the force continuum. If you raise your hand to a police officer is allowed to grab your hand. If you pull out a knife, the officer's allowed to shoot you. We're allowed to be one step ahead of your violence. So police don't have to get hit in the head with a bat in order to respond. So I would instruct my officers, turn your cameras on so everybody can see it, do the right thing, and pick one person out of that crowd at a time. You always get the big mouth. Whoever's running their mouth first, you go grab them, and then you the rest of you usually fall because they're mostly cowards. But I do have a clip here that I thought was interesting. There was a journalist, and I think we all saw this, Andy Goh. Andy was there filming Antifa. He was walking around. He was trying to develop information for a story that he wanted to write. And because he was there, he was attacked by the Antifa mob, and he was injured, a very serious injury, as a matter of fact. And he got one of those concrete milkshakes in the face. But recently, you saw a lot of stories about him. He came up with a theory about what these people are really all about. And he's talking about, you know, actually they are a communist organization and what they're doing. So he was on Fox News recently on the Laura Ingraham show. And I love Laura. Laura is, she's excellent. So Andy was on there and we have a clip. It's about a minute long, but I think you need to really listen to what Andy had to say because he was attacked. He was injured. And I don't know that he thought this before the attack, but I'm sure he's done his research since then. So you're going to pick up here where Laura's asking him, what does she think? What does he think about who the Antifa are and what they're really, what their goals are? So let's see how this goes.
United States stoking violent confrontation, perhaps with police, ultimately leading others around the country, because it's now kind of all around the country. It's not just in one city like Portland. Is this their ultimate aim, and how did it start?
That's a great question. So a lot of attention is paid to these incidents of the street hooliganism, which is one aspect of their tactics. But more important, I think, is the ideology, which you mentioned. They're working towards a political revolution. They're made up of anarchists and communists. And these acts of violence and vandalism that target, they're meant to not only target citizens, but they're meant to polarize society. It's meant to also delegitimize our institutions that uphold the laws, for example. So they have a lot of hate and for law enforcement, for border enforcement. And you see reflected in their chants as well as where they target the acts of violence when it's not just directed at citizens.
And who inspires them? Have you been able to get to the heart of that?
Laura asks him at the end there, who does Andy think, now that he's done his research on them, who does he think inspires them? And he says he believes that they're Marxist, most of them. The entire group is Marxist, communist. And their job, though, is to ferment this societal difficulty, this trouble, this hatred of each other that's going to boil over into the streets and have this revolution. This is nothing new, ladies and gentlemen. This is a time-honored way that the left causes change. Now, in some places, they've had that revolution. That takeover of the society. Look at the big ones. You had the Soviet Union. They took it over through the same thing. You had the brown shirts of Hitler take over the German people. You had Castro in Cuba, who started out saying he was going to be a leader for freedom and ended up going to the Communist Party. These are the violent people over and over, and we're seeing it again now with the Antifa. Where else are we seeing it? Oh, that's right, in our own United States Congress. All right, we have AOC plus three, or whatever they're calling them, the group of four. These four Congress people who are avowed Democrat socialists, but they're still socialists in the same vein. They want to come out and make rules for everyone else to follow. They want to dictate how society should interact with each other. They want to make things fair by taking things away from some people and giving them to others. This pattern is just repeating over and over and over again. So the entire first segment here, what I'm talking about is this vein of violence that's running through society is leading somewhere. You know, you've heard me say time and time again, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. And the reality of that is that once something starts, unless you cut it off immediately, it's just going to grow. And this violence in our society, the Antifa, these active shooters, these people that have these maniacal thoughts about doing things to other people, hurting them, demanding everyone listen to them. We see this political correctness, which is a throat grab on all the rest of us, demanding that we speak only a certain way, that we have speech codes, that we should be penalized if we don't agree. Look at the change in our society. Did you ever think that the American flag would be seen as a symbol of hate as opposed to a symbol of freedom and justice for what it has stood for the entire time of our country's existence up until now, up until this point in our country's history where we happen to be living our lives? You know, it has fallen to us. Little did I think earlier on in my life that the promise of America, the dream of America, would be threatened in my lifetime, that it would actually fall to me, and now to my children and grandchildren are going to be fighting this battle. Up to now, I have said we're in the middle of the cold Civil War, and I'm almost getting ready to change that perception, because now people are getting hurt. People are getting killed. It is happening with more frequency. People are demanding it. How many times do you think you would have heard 10 or 12 years ago that people are writing stories about killing the president, shooting at the president, doing horrible things to the president because they don't like him? Does anyone get in trouble for that anymore? There was a time that the Secret Service would show up at your door and do an investigation. Now, I'm sure they're still doing that when they get threats that we don't hear about. But these political people are saying these things. These Congress people are saying these things. And we just march right along because the genie, my friends, is out of the bottle. And this particular genie is not the friendly one. All right, she's not the one living in Cocoa Beach in a little bottle and a bikini and giving people wishes. This is a dangerous, dangerous genie that is out of the bottle, and eventually it's going to affect all of us sooner, I think, rather than later. So when we come back, we have a lot more to talk about. I'll see you on round two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Chasing Justice here for round two on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we're going to continue along this thread because there's a couple more things I wanted to talk about. First of all, let's deal with the Antifa, and let's put a bow around that. President Trump recently has come out and said that he is considering very strongly in working with the Justice Department to label Antifa, to designate them as a terrorist organization because of the activities that they engage in. I think this is something that needs to be done. You cannot have something this violent, this cancerous to society to just operate free will, because it's not going to get better. They're going to get more violent. They're going to be emboldened when they are not shut down. When they show up at a park where people are having a party about the American flag, and they show up with sticks and masks and mace and start attacking people, and nobody does anything, you're asking them to do more and more, and you know what's going to happen. You know where that violence leads to. So at this point, designating them as a terrorist organization is a very good idea. I would encourage the president to do it and do it immediately, and then begin to investigate the leadership, and I would use whatever federal, state, and local statutes are available to go after them for, obviously, they're federal, under the federal guidelines, terrorist acts, domestic terrorism, but as far down as simple assault. Assault, put these people in the system. All right, let's get their names. Communities can come up with, no mask laws, so that if they're wearing masks and they show up, that provides the law enforcement officers with an in to go investigate who these people are. You're not allowed to wear a mask. You can't wear a mask in a bank, although, you know, there's a whole other thing on religious garb when people are covered and they go in the bank, but that's religious, and I think we need to look at that. I'm still considering my thoughts on that, but in general, you can't walk in there with a mask to a bank, because you know who walks in there with a mask to a bank? A robber, so that you can't see their face and they can get away with their crime. That's why these Antifa people wear masks, so they can engage in their mayhem, their assaults, and do what they're doing without fear of repercussions, that nobody will be able to identify them. So having a no-mask ordinance in your community allows the police to stop anyone with a mask and find out who they are. And you'll see these cowards run. When they can't hide themselves behind their masks, they're not going to stay and do what they're going to do. And if they do, then you got them. You hold them accountable, and you prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. Then you go after the leadership. You know, like anything, you want to stop something. Going after the underlings is a good way to get information to go after the leaders, but you have to get the leaders. You know what they say, cut the head off the snake. That's what you have to do here. So I would use, if you could use the RICO statutes, if you're saying that they're a criminal organization, whatever you could use, I would do that. I would also create new laws. And again, this is a little bit of a slippery slope when you start creating laws to address groups, because it could easily be used on peaceful groups later on that we don't care about, we don't care for politically. So if there's groups we don't like, you can have an inappropriate leader use those kind of statutes against groups that are not violent. So it would have to be worded very specifically, but I would not be opposed to coming up with new laws to address violent activities. And I'm sure the street gang laws in many states would cover this, because there's no doubt they're a gang, no doubt they're organized, no doubt they have a mission, and they have tactics. They have a uniform, so to say. You know, you see what they look like. So I think they're easy enough to go after if we have the political will and the guts to go after them. Your community will maybe get that political will when enough of your people are injured, enough of your citizens that are just going about their business are attacked by these people. Then you might get the political people to make a move. So the Antifa should be designated as a terrorist group, and we should go after them. Andy Go, I agree with you. I don't know how much other I would agree with you, but I do agree with you there. And I hope you get better from your attack. All right, so that's going to lead us down another line here. Recently, the president made some comments about the city of Baltimore that immediately people are jumping on him and saying that, he's being racist in his comments. A dangerous city has nothing to do with race. A dangerous city is because people living there engage in dangerous activities that are dangerous to the public. It doesn't matter if you're black or white. It doesn't matter who you are. If that's what goes on in your city, then that's a danger. The president is talking about Baltimore. Now, if you've ever been to Baltimore, the Inner Harbor is a beautiful area. But everybody there will tell you, be careful where you go after that, because you'll have a problem. And you always say, well, what do you mean you'll have a problem? You'll get robbed. You'll get mugged. Somebody will injure you. Some kind of an attack if you go three blocks outside of the Inner Harbor area. And I know it's probably a bigger area than that. So people in Baltimore, you don't have to complain. You know what I'm talking about, though. Because I've stopped and asked directions from people. And they would say, yeah, just here, just don't go over there. Okay? Now, if you want to classify that as racist, it's because you really don't want to look at the problem. You know how many people live in those communities that don't want to live with crime-filled communities? I would say most of them. They want to raise their families. They want to have opportunity like everybody else in the country. but they suffer with a crime-ridden neighborhood. And we don't go in there and do anything about it. Why don't we do anything about it? Look at Chicago. How many murders and shooting have to go on in that community before we go in and help protect those Americans? They are American citizens. They're our brothers and sisters. Doesn't matter what race they are. But why do we let it go? Well, you have a political will in Chicago, in the mayor's office, that doesn't want the police going in there and doesn't want them terrorizing people and all the horrible things they say about cops. In the meantime, the citizens are being gunned down every week. There's 45, 50 shootings every weekend with 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 people murdered. These people's lives are destroyed. Their families are destroyed. Why don't we go in there and do something about it? So when the president made comments about Baltimore, these are the same comments that many other people have made over the years. But see, now because Trump makes the comment, let's immediately jump on it and say the only reason he's saying is because he doesn't like the race of the people that are affected, which is ridiculous. I don't think you can really tie racism to this guy. He has been a friend of anybody who's productive, anybody who's trying to get ahead. He has friends from every walk of life. And I'm not here to defend President Trump, but I've watched him over the years. He was beloved by so many different groups of people. And because he has something to say, suddenly now it's a hammer that they want to use against him because they're trying to turn the minority community away from him before the 2020 election. Do we see another pattern here? Human beings, right? I've talked about it in investigations. Human beings are creatures of habit. We have patterns. And our friends on the left, they use this pattern every single time there's an election. That anybody on the right who doesn't believe like them only is motivated by hate. That's the only reason they're motivated. Every Republican is motivated by hate. Every conservative is motivated by hate. You see what the AOC and her three friends, you know, no matter what it is, it's because they want to make America white again. They want to do this. They want to hold these people down. They want to attack that group. All of that is absolute nonsense. I don't know about you, but I don't wake up in the morning thinking about whose race is what or who. I don't consider that at all. You know, we're all Americans. If everybody acts as decent people and we just go about our business, try and take care of our families and make a better life, then I think it works out for everybody. So on the brighter side, we saw the people throwing water at the cops, which was horrific. And that is obviously a symptom of our decaying society, where people now feel so emboldened that not only, you know, do they disregard when the police tell them what to do, but now they actually attack the officers. And it's one thing. It's one thing. I will differentiate this. It's one thing to shoot water guns at these cops. And it's another to interfere when they're making an arrest, which was really dangerous. So I watched two officers arresting a guy. And everyone started shooting water at them, throwing buckets at them, actually throwing the buckets, hitting the cops in the head. Now, if that's not interfering with an arrest, I don't know what is. Now, New York, the mayor there, another left-wing individual who's very anti-police, he initially didn't say anything about it, didn't do anything about this, and it started getting worse. And where was that going to go? It was going to continue downhill until somebody got hurt really bad. So, you know, there was enough publicity about it. Enough people on social media were shocked. If you saw the videos, the comments of people were absolutely amazing that this really can't stand. And when I see it as a symptom of that that devolvement of our society. Well, under pressure, for whatever reason, the mayor came out and he said, you know, we can no longer have this happen and we must take action and we must go after it. And I think there was probably a message sent that they're going to have to arrest some people who are doing this and bring this to an end, because we haven't seen any more incidents. So maybe people out in the community out there probably got the idea that, if we go any further with this, we're going to be the example that's going to be made. It's a shame that our society has to come to that. It was shocking to watch the police be attacked in that way, and to watch the poor young officers who really had to just take that. And really, it was nothing to it. It was water. It was humiliating. It was uncomfortable. It was inappropriate. But you know, they weren't getting hit in the head with anything. They weren't getting shot. You know, so for their response to be what they should turn around and go to arrest the people who were doing the water throwing, But what happens when the person who throws the water then decides, well, I don't want to be arrested for that. I don't think you have a right to arrest me. I'm not going to cooperate. What is the officer supposed to do? Just walk away? Give him a piece of paper and say, well, sir, I'm going to charge you with the crime, but you turn yourself in when you feel like it, and you'll get your charges. No, you put the officers in a position where, once they've decided to make an arrest, the citizen does not get to resist. Now, we've gone over this, but I guess it's an educational moment. We have to ask ourselves, who are the cops? Our police are out there because we, the people, demand that they're out there. We demand that there be sets of laws. That's why we have legislators, to make laws that we want, to keep us safe, to keep our society cohesive and safe and in order. Well, once you have these laws, you have to have someone to enforce them, because if not, human nature is, people will do whatever they want. The strongest among us will, the strongest among us will take over. They'll take what you got, beat you, rob you, rape you, and that's how society will be run. We've said no. We're going to have laws, and we're going to have people who are going to enforce those laws. That's where the police come from. So the police are not a rogue band of individuals, men and women, that go around just do whatever the heck they feel like doing, picking on whoever they feel like picking on. The police are there because we, the people, have designated their position. We've given them the authority to act in our name. See, that's what a lot of people forget. The police are not out there just because they get to be cops with guns and badges. They are out there because we have demanded it. They're acting on our behalf to enforce those laws. That is why you show them respect. That is why you comply with their orders. That is why you do what they tell you. Now, for those people who have had a bad run-in with a police officer, I know that happens. All my brother and sister officers know that that happens. And we, as a group, must insist in our training and everything else that our officers always act appropriately. And I'm going to tell you, 99.9% of them do. It's the one-tenth of 1% that we see on the camera that makes everybody look bad. But our cops are really out there doing a hell of a job. Matter of fact, look at everything we just talked about since this program started today. If you didn't have law enforcement out there, think of how things would actually devolve, how quickly we would be in big, big trouble without that thin blue line. So that's why we have to respect them. Throwing the water on them is a sign of disrespect. It is a sign of the society devolving. And I'm glad it looks like it's slowed down and it's backing up. So on the bright side of this, I did see another video in New York in the Canarsie section of Brooklyn. I saw a group of people from the community of all different races. They got together and they set up a police car washing station, if you can believe that. They encouraged the cops to come by with their patrol cars. They stopped the car in front of the thing, and the community people all came out together and washed the cop car. Cleaned it off so that the officers could have a nice car. It's a nice community gesture. It was really, you know, if you think about it, it was a healing thing, especially in New York. You know, Canarsie and Brooklyn is part of New York. For those who don't know the area, it was actually a healing thing, I think, for those people in the community to come out and to say to their cops, hey, we're not all against you. We're on the team here, and we're going to do this as a team. It was really nice to see. So if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube, go to other social media, and look up citizens washing cop cars. I think you'll see something really, really spectacular. It was a nice move for the people there to do that. Maybe that'll help heal some of that rift that's going on there. All right, so let's lead us further down the road with our president, because we only have a couple minutes left in this section, but we're going to come back, and when we're done, we're going to talk about a topic that came up. Me and Mrs. Kathy Pangaro were talking about, people say all the time, you know, do the right thing, do the right thing. But do we really spend time teaching people what is the right thing and how do you do it? I don't know if we do so much of that. So we're going to talk about that in the third segment. But for right now, we see that the president is got a new intelligence leader. All right, we have the previous gentleman stepping down, Mr. Coates, and the president he's going to nominate, or if he hasn't already, John Ratcliffe. And the media on the left are once again losing their minds, going crazy, because they say he's a loyalist. He's a loyalist to Trump. He defends Trump. He stands up for Trump. What's he supposed to pick? Who's he supposed to pick? Somebody who hates him? Who's against him completely? Is that what you're supposed to do? Is that the new standard now? So someday when a Democrat becomes president, and they will because it goes back and forth, when a Democrat becomes president, he better not pick someone who is loyal to him. He had better not pick someone who thinks like he does. He had better pick someone from the Republican Party. Matter of fact, shouldn't they pick that for their vice president then? Shouldn't every person that the president picks be in complete opposition to their point of view, if we're to follow that kind of logic and reasoning? No, that's ridiculous. So picking a loyalist is really a smart idea. That's what you do when you're in power. You need people around you to support you and to back you up. You know, this president has suffered in a way I've never seen in my life when people in his own orbit, people that he had to pick from. You know, this guy is not a politician. He's a citizen that became the president of the United States. He doesn't have these relationships with these swamp creatures all over the place that he knows who's good and who's bad. So he get in there and he got advice from a lot of swamp creatures. Pick this guy, Jeff Sessions. Right? I always thought Jeff Sessions was a good guy. He was a failure as the Attorney General. Now, he didn't have to be, you know, Trump's guy to look out for him. That's not the Attorney General's job. But at the same time, there was obviously things going wrong that should have been investigated, no matter who the Attorney General was, to see where that was going. And we see that, they're losing their mind over Bob Barr, because Bob Barr is doing just that. He's seeing that there was some inappropriate things going on with the intelligence agencies, the FBI, law enforcement, all on the Obama watch, that did things against Trump. That's where this whole investigation is going. And these people are now losing their mind, saying he's out there to protect Trump. No, the things that they did were wrong, were illegal, was a coup d'etat forming right in front of us. And the most horrible thing that has happened, I think, in this country in a very long time. And Bob Barr's out there trying to dismantle it and at least let us all know what happened. Kind of important, don't you think? But they're losing their minds over this John Ratcliffe because he's a supporter of the president. He's a loyalist. They make it sound so horrible. But I think it's really good. And I think we have a lot to look forward to politically. We're going to see a lot of fireworks. We have new Democrat debates coming up. And there's 20 of them still. So I think we're going to narrow that down probably to 10. And then it's really going to get interesting. We'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue: Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
All right. Okay, we're back here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I do love being here with all of you. Now, a couple weeks ago, I did some shout-outs to some of our friends out on Twitter, and I have to say that I'm really enjoying Twitter. I'm new at all this social media stuff. I think it's great to connect with everybody. But there's some people. I'm going to go through my feed here and see some of these people here. I'm going to say, the All-American Tweety Pie, thank you very, very much for all your commentary and for helping to get the word out about the show. If you're listening to our show here, we would like you to be a part of this. All right, so you can follow us on Twitter. Is at Pangaro Global. At Pangaro Global. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the shows that come on before me, after me, in the middle of the night, on the weekends. America Out Loud is a great radio station. It's the voice of free speech here in America. There are no holes barred, like I've said many times. Nobody calls me up and says, hey, Lieutenant Joe, you better talk about this. You better not talk about that. I'm given a free microphone here for me to talk about whatever comes up. And that is what free speech is all about. You can like what I say, you can not like what I say. But the reality is, we get to say these things. So if you want to reach out to me, you can reach out at jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. That's my email. And I'd love to hear from you. So we get people all the time who send me messages and gives me some ideas sometimes of things to talk about because I find out what's important to you. So I would love to hear from everybody out there. So the All-American Tweety Pie, thank you so much for your comments. Charlotte, Chief Mike Walker. Chief Mike Walker is out there. He says he's a very interesting guy. Let's see, who else we got? Patriot 1776, how you doing? All right, love your tweets. Let's see, AM out there, how you doing? You're constantly out there tweeting. You're very active, and you have a lot of good things to say. I enjoy listening to you there, reading what you got to say. So there's some of the people. As I look through the feed here, there's just so many people now that are doing the right thing. They're using their opportunity at free speech, listening to my show, tweeting, going to social media, having their say. The more talk we have, the better, not the less talk. You know, somebody can come out and say something ugly and terrible and rotten, and we can all hate what was said. We can despise the comments that were made or the meaning behind the words, but we can't remove the words. We can't cover up the words. We have to let the words flow, and we make our decision based on what we think about what somebody says. Right, to go in and censor someone just because we don't like them, we don't like their point of view, that's not the purpose. You know, free speech gives us free speech to talk to each other, and that's what gives us the ability to protest our government. That's what gives us the ability to stand together whenever we don't agree with something that's going on, whether it's the government or our community or whatever, and to say no, or conversely to say yes, this is great, we like this, let's keep doing it. But without free speech, we are silenced. And that is the first step to controlling everyone, is to stop them from talking. That's why standing up for free speech is one of the most important things we can do. And listening to this radio station is one way you can do it. So thank you for being here. I really do appreciate it. All right, so we got the intel chief in here. I wanted to go back to Baltimore real quick. I have my notes here and what I'm looking at. You know, they complained that Trump brought up some of the things that go on in Baltimore. But then you can watch on the news, certain news stations, and you can look on social media, and you can see people that live there, good, decent people that live in that city, even in some of the really rough areas, they are sick and tired of the same things that go on there that Trump is complaining about. You know, he's not complaining about people. He's complaining about the conditions, the way some people act, and the way, you know, why aren't they taking care of that neighborhood? Why isn't the government not in there making sure all the garbage is picked up? You know, he said that there's rat-infested areas. And you go there, and you look it up, and you find out that there's a horrific rat problem in Baltimore. Why should people have to live with that? Why should little children have to worry about the rats are in their house, in their apartment, on the streets when they're walking and playing? Why should people have to deal with that? That's something you should get rid of. But instead of dealing with what he said, they attacked him and said, well, he said infested. What does he mean by infested? It must be some racial comment he's making. See, this is what the damage that political correctness and these people do. They don't want to hear your message. They want to turn your message around and add their own message to it. So is Baltimore a city that has a lot of crime? It is. Look up the statistics. Nobody's making that up. Are there a lot of rats causing a lot of problems? There are. Ask the people who live there. They don't like living with it. It should be cleaned up. They deserve to live in a place that's not infested with rats and garbage and crime. These are American citizens, that it's the obligation of their government that's there to help them, right? So that means you send in the police to quell violence. You send in the exterminators to get rid of the rats. You send in the garbage men to clean up the garbage, right? It's very, very simple. There's nothing about it other than that. What we do need to look at, though, is these cities that are in the same kind of conditions are run by the same political party. Now, that's something we can talk about. Why is it that cities that are run by people on the left and Democrats are not all of them, but many of them fall into the exact same category? They have lots of crime. They have lots of problems. Why would that be? Oh my gosh, Lieutenant Joe, you better not say that. Because remember, here in Political Correct America, we don't speak the truth. We pretend. We always pretend. We just close your eyes to the truth and just pretend that the president is really just attacking people he doesn't like, as opposed to pointing out horrific conditions in an American city that should not exist. That the government that's in charge there, the elected officials, should get down there and clean that mess up. And if they can't, they should ask for help. Because nobody in America should have to live in a city like that. Bernie Sanders went there not too long ago. And Bernie came out saying that he thought it was like a third world country. Why would we have a third world country in America? Right? We can't have that. So those people are our neighbors. They are our friends. They're our brother and sisters. They're Americans. They deserve to have a nice, clean neighborhood that is safe and free from crime. Same thing in Chicago, same thing in Baltimore, in any other city that has these kind of problems. We close our eyes to it because if you try to do anything about it, you're attacked, right? So we have to really rethink that mess in all of these cities and help try and clean them up. All right, I wanted to talk about Bob Mueller real quick. Because I had to gather my thoughts about this guy, and I went back and forth. Now, you saw on the hearings everybody tripping over themselves and trying to make a big deal out of Mr. Mueller, thank you for your distinguished career, Mr. Mueller. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for everything you've done. And there is an extent of that where you can say, up to a certain point, he did have a very distinguished career as a prosecutor, as a government employee, as a person who serves the people by working in the government. And I kind of felt bad that I've said all along this investigation was a complete sham. It was obvious to me and to any clear-thinking person from the beginning that this was a sham. The evidence is, I've never seen more evidence in my life in any kind of a case than what we have right here in front of us. The shenanigans that went on, the bending of the law, the twisting of people's words to go after people, all with one purpose, and that's to undo an election that the other side didn't expect to lose. And everything that they were doing up to that point was to ensure that the election went to Hillary Clinton, and when it didn't, they knew they were going to be exposed, so the only thing they could do then is try and destroy this guy, this President Trump, before he had an opportunity to bring all this stuff out. Well, now I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say the Mueller report came out, and Mr. Mueller, he stumbled and he bumbled and he did not acquit himself well. I don't know if it was if age was a factor. I don't know what else is going on with him. He did not look like the guy that they make him out to be. He didn't know his own case, which tells you very clearly he didn't guide that investigation. Someone else did. And if you look at who he picked, I don't know how. Could you imagine if there was a case going on today and President Trump assigned a special prosecutor to go after Hillary Clinton, and he assigned Rudy Giuliani to be the special prosecutor, and then everybody that's ever spoken out against the Clintons, that's been Republican donors and have been on Trump's team, he puts them all on the team as the prosecutors. Do you think there would be any commentary about that? Do you think that that would be allowed to stand in the court of public opinion? Do you think the media would just applaud and say, well, every one of those people individually are really good guys and girls, so I guess we can trust them to go do what they got to do? This is part of the double standard, which tells you why was there such a double standard? Because this was a sham. This was an attempt to go out and destroy this guy before he could bring out what's about to come out, I think. I think we're about to see some of the truth come out. Now, I've said all along, I don't know that there's going to be prosecutions. I don't know, as good as Bob Barr seems to be performing, and you all know, you've heard me say, I was wary of what he was going to do, whether he was going to do the right thing or not. Looks like he's doing the right thing. A lot of foot dragging here. I think more stuff could come out now. What have you learned in the investigation up to point ABC? I think you could help us out with that. But I think there will be an accounting. At least we will find out what happened. There'll be some declarative statement of things that really did happen inappropriately, and some maybe some things that look like they're inappropriate and really they weren't. Because you have to hold your head open to the fact that, you know, maybe not everything is as it seems, and just because it seems like it's going against people we don't agree with, that everything must have been wrong. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe not everything they did was wrong. Maybe they had some reason genuinely for what they did, but it's pretty clear that the overall picture was a sham. It was led by people who had a negative motive, and they used our American system of justice against us. Right? They used it against us, and that cannot stand. That has got to be corrected. I don't know if there'll be prosecutions, because I don't know that they're going to have the stomach to do it. But I think we will get some kind of a declarative statement about this is what happened, A, B, C, and D went wrong, and it's not appropriate, and it should never happen again, blah, 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 that kind of a thing. Which brings me up to the topic I want to end this segment with. We hope that Mr. Barr and all those people who are now investigating what went on, we're hoping that they do the right thing. We're hoping they do the right thing. What exactly does that mean, do the right thing? You know, I end almost every one of these programs by saying, you know, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Which is really another way of saying, do the right thing. But we use these vague terms. And do we spend time explaining what that means? Do we tell young people, we say, do the right thing. What exactly does that mean, do the right thing? You know, I guess it depends on what you're espousing. If you're an Antifa guy and you're espousing, you're saying, do the right thing, that could mean fermenting violence, couldn't it? Because that would be the right thing based on their motivation, what they're trying to do. For us, for all of us in the bigger society who see the cohesion of society holding together because we've all agreed to live a certain way so that we can have a decent life where we're not in conflict every minute, where we can follow our passions, we can raise our families, we can have success in our lives. Do the right thing, for the most part, means be honest, be fair. Be just. Be righteous in what you do when you're dealing with other people. You know, treat people like you would want to be treated. You know, think about that kind of thing. That's what do the right thing means. If you have a chance to do something that helps or that hurts, do something that helps. That is what it means to do the right thing. When I end the program and I say, you know, be a part of the solution, not the problem, I'm not talking about the solution of how to start the revolution. I'm talking about being part of the solution that makes the world better for all of us, that makes opportunity for every single American, that talks about how do you make your neighborhood better. You know, I'm sitting here behind this microphone, and I cannot make the country better. Now, if you elect me president someday, then I could do it. You know, ask Mrs. Pengaro, she'll tell you all about that. But what I can do here is I can make sure my neighbor next door, my elderly neighbor, is okay when it's 105 degrees outside. See, that's doing the right thing. You know, if you teach your kids to look out for the weak among us, for the people who are not the great natural leaders, think about our schools. Do we want our kids bullying other kids, making fun of kids who are different? Or do we want them to embrace those kids? And, you know, they don't have to be their best friends, but they don't have to hurt them. They don't have to humiliate them. They have to hurt their feelings. Imagine how bad it feels to be a kid that has some difficulties and you know you have those difficulties and everybody's making fun of those difficulties. Why would you do that? That kind of behavior is what you consider being part of the problem. So when we say do the right thing, do we spend time mentoring young people? Young men today, you know, I see so many young men out there today that don't have any close leadership. You know, maybe they don't have a dad who's around. Maybe the dad died. Maybe the dad left. Who knows? There's all kinds of different things. But we don't see decency taught. We don't teach young men what it means to be a man. And because you know what? Part of our politically correct world says that being a man is bad. Is that part of the solution or is that part of the problem? I think when you start to put it that way, when you ask those questions, it clarifies the situation. So we take away classic, decent manhood and how a man takes care of his family, his community, how he looks out for weak people, how he tries to build people up. We look at that and we say that that's now a negative, that that's a bad thing. And then what result do you get there? You get these young men who go out and do negative, bad things, and our society continues to devolve. So when you say do the right thing, that means telling them what the right thing is, physically telling them what the right thing is. The right thing to do is not pick on that kid who has a problem. The right thing to do is to help that kid. If that kid's having a problem with something, go, and you're good at something, say it's sports, and that kid, you know, can't, you, we've all know the kids that they can't run, they can't fall, they trip over their own feet, they're not coordinated. Instead of making fun of that kid, you're a really good athlete. Why don't you go help that kid and just help him to run a little better or to catch the ball a little better? Isn't that something your father would have done with you? That's doing the right thing. So there's many examples we can find throughout our society where you can choose to be a part of the solution or you can choose to be a part of the problem. You can do the right thing, but you have to say what the right thing is. So I would say if you have an opportunity to mentor somebody or to help a young man or a young woman, you know, women are in a different world today. They're trying to figure out how do they fit into this new world. We've given them all these new rules on how they're supposed to interact and how they're supposed to get ahead. Well, if you've been successful, tell them what it means to be successful. Tell them how to deal with these things. That is what it means to do the right thing. I don't think we have enough of that in our society. I think we just say the words. You know, we espouse the words instead of giving the examples. And there's a great picture I saw. What was it? It was pouring rain somewhere, and there was someone in a wheelchair, and there was somebody standing next to them, holding the umbrella over that person's head. Now, the person holding the umbrella was getting soaked. And it said, doing the right thing is in your actions, not in your words. So that's where we're going to end it for today. Think about that. Do the right thing. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. It's not easy, but in the long run, it makes for a better society, makes you a better person. You end up helping somebody, which is really a good thing, right? Let's help Baltimore. Let's help Chicago. Let's do the right thing. That's what we're all here for. We're Americans. We do the right thing. So until we meet again, we'll see you out there in Chasing Justice Land on the America Out Loud Radio Network.